I'm talking now to Mr. Blank, who lives at Paignton, and he's a very youthful looking 80, isn't that correct? 80? Yes. And he puts the secret of his youth down to the eternal pipe and plenty of fresh air. Anyway, over to Mr. Blank. Your life, I mean, as a soldier.
And he was the youngest boy there, he was about 14. And he said, don't join up, Aaron, don't join up.
How old were you then?
Well, I was 18, I suppose, just over 18. Well, coming 19, I suppose.
And you'd been for 4 years in the brickyard, had you?
Well, I've been a good while in the brickyard, yes. Yeah, because, you see, every 50 brick was run on a barrow in those days, you see. There wasn't no motors that run them into the kiln, see. So if they got tight like that, we'd run down a barrel of bricks. Well, then could I gradually learn the setting and all that, you see?
What did you get paid for doing this?
Paid?
What did? How much did you get paid?
Paid?
Yes.
Fourpence hour. Oh. I had 18 bob a week, you know. Had to pay 10 bob a week, the odds then. I hate to spend, but cool. I mean, you had a different job was coming in the town quarter in the days, because you could go in Winter Street there and you could have a penneth of chips, penneth of fish, and a penneth of peas and a penny bottle of lemonade. Fourpence was your supper, you see, the difference. Yeah, yeah.
So then you decided you'd had enough of this and you wanted to join up, did you?
Well, three of us joined up together. Three of us went, and we never saw one another after. One was paralysed, I think, with a shell. I don't know. I can't say exactly, but I never saw one after. And the other one, he was killed. I was only one out of three that come back. So this young chap told me I didn't know, of course.
What did you feel like when you went in the army and tasted army discipline?
Well, I really didn't like it. Of course I didn't. Because I had a good home, good parents, and when I got up to Exeter first, you see, you don't get used to the army in 2 minutes. So I went out. You had a pair of white gloves, which you had to carry in your left hand, and a swagger stick in the other with the Denham crest on it. And I was going out the gate of Exeter, and I was sent back. Then I was for the high jump, and the next morning I had to, with others, I had to scrub out the gym room on my hands and knees with a bucket of water and a bar of soap. Yeah, I didn't think I was very good.
Why was this? Why did you have to scrub out this gym?
Because I went out without my stick. You weren't properly dressed, you see. In those days, there was discipline. So then, of course, we got over all the little things, and then you was issued with your gear at Exeter, boot size and a couple of shirts they brought at in. Yeah. So that's how we got through that lot.
What time did they get you up in the morning?
I forget that. I think it was 6 o'clock. Yeah, I don't think I am. I haven't thought of that really. Well, about six, I think it was re-ballet. And then you done drill before about four, I suppose. And then after you clean, you was allowed to go out. Yeah, so that's how that was.
What did you do when you went out on leave?
From Albert Exeter?
Yes.
Well, we walked around the town. I remember going into Deller's Cafe there. That was, there was three of us. One chap, I think he's still living, I don't know. He was called Cooley from Mudbury. And he was severely wounded and that. I've been in St. Vincent's, I've been home. But he couldn't remember me because I got all the photos of the battalion, you see. And he couldn't pick me out. But his wife could, you know, or could see it was me. But me and he went in the short cafe, because we was country. I was born in Stoke Gabriel, you see. Proper country chap, you know. So, and he was a big breed. That was worse still. So, our Mudbury, I don't know, Big Breed. Well, I'll call him Big Breed. He's on the way at Big Breed. And me and he used to go about together, you see. And we went in this cafe, of course, was the upstairs was the winding stairs in that day. And to see these maidens, girls coming down with the white aprons and the short skirts, you know, and black stockings. Yeah, I remember this was yesterday. Yeah. Oh, and walk around the town. And of course, on Sundays you had to go to the cathedral. Walked in and walked out. And dismissed, of course. But that's all I can think about that.
What did your parents say when they knew you'd joined up? Did they know that you were going to volunteer or not?
Well, no. My mother, soon as her heard that bugle's blowing for the recruiting, she had a stroke and died. So she died in about August, I think. I can't just tell it. About August. And my father, he lived to be 86. I saw him when I come home again, you know. And she couldn't bear to think that anybody had to go to war, because I suppose they remembered something about the Boer War. I don't know. Of course, I know my brothers did. They well, so she would, certainly. And then she died, and then, of course, Alan was over, oh, I'll join up. And I joined up.
Did you have any brothers go into the services?
No. One brother was too old, and one of the two then, the two was, well, they could run a farm. They was good blokes on a farm, you know. I mean, they could do anything. They could run the farm, and the farmer, well, one did finish up as a, well, I don't know that he finished up at it, because he left afterwards, but he was iron for Mr. Hunt, and he run all one farm, breeding and sheep, and, well, he could do anything, you know, I mean, and he lived in a farmhouse and, well, run it.
Now, you joined up in September 1914.
Yeah.
When did you actually go out to France?
Now then. Oh, I can't say no.
Would it be in 1915?
Yes, 1915 sometime. I don't know when. I can't think of the dates.
Can you remember where you sailed from?
Yeah, we sailed Southampton.
Did you? And you landed where? Can you remember?
Le Havre, was it? Le Havre, I think. Because I know we went up, Israel's at the back of Lear, you don't know. There was a camp up there, and as we was marching up, there was other regiments there, you know. And there was a Welsh bloke there singing, "I wonder who's kissing her now." Yeah, you know, very cheerful folk. Yeah, and then we marched from there, I don't know, or did we go by train? I don't know, I'll forget that a little bit. Yeah, I can't think about that. But,
can you remember what part of the line you went to first?
Well, they called it Horseshoe Bend. They called the front line we was on. Because when we marched up there that time, they reckoned that there was a German spy was leading us, and they led us so many miles away from the front line, that way, at the left side of where we were supposed to have went. And then we came back to this place in the, I can't remember the villages. I was talking to Albert Cornish, the other day. He was a sergeant in the drivers. What do we call it?
Transport.
Yeah, in the transport of the food and that. And he knew every village, you know. But I couldn't think of him, see, because we weren't there long enough to, not back in the village long enough to know much. I know the French women didn't want much of us, or the whatever, weren't many husbands there. I know we was in one village where we came back to, where the Germans had left, and they'd rather see the Germans there than us. Yeah.
Why was that, do you know?
I don't know, because they hadn't got them in the family way, but they had a good time with the young ones, you know. And still the French people like that. Yeah.
What did it feel like when you came under fire for the first time?
Well, very nervous job, I called it. You know, you feel that rumble in your stomach. You ever had that? Yeah, and you felt that because, you didn't know what you was expecting, did he? Oh, one of our lance corporals, he said, oh, they won't hurt us, he said. And the sniper caught him, and because there wasn't no steel helmets in their days, you see. And he caught him there, and he plowed his head right back through, like a plow had been through there, yeah. He was called Pierce from Plymouth. I don't know, I never saw him since.
Did it kill him?
No, it just scalped him, like it didn't hurt his bone or nothing. Just scalped, you know, plowed back his flesh from, and his hair was back.
Now, you must have seen some terrible sights. Can you tell me something about them?
Well, I've seen several, yeah. Of course, as they fell off the parapet, so... Well, they would lie. You couldn't get them out, not then, you see. You couldn't do nothing about it. You had to keep your post. Or you'd get an officer up around you pretty quick. On the traverse, or what they call it. Off of traverse, that's right, isn't it? Yeah. And, about two men, one each end of a 16-foot trench, you know. And they was all around like that there. And then one night there, they was sending over these trench mortars and small shells. And I jumped down and off a trench, you know. Because you had them glasses you looked in, like look in the bottom and see what was doing in the top. And that was a tunnel. The REs had dug right through underneath the German lines. Well, cutting all that far, you see. Yeah, I jumped down there and out come an officer, you know. I didn't jump down in that part, I jumped down in this part, but he said the sound of me jumping off and hitting the boards would sound through the tunnel. So I didn't get very well liked about that.
I expect you lost some good friends, didn't you?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Did you feel upset when you saw them killed and wounded around?
Well, you didn't know who was the next, did he? You had to really trust on yourself, you know. Yeah. Oh, no, I don't. You lose your friend, you lose... Well, I lost that. Cooley, he was lost, and he was a nice chap, you know, nice mate. So there you are, he was taken away, and I didn't know what become of him. I was yours before I found him. Yeah, and I found him down at, Big Breeder. Yeah, but he was terrible. He'd have lost of two legs. He was walking about on crutches. Everything else was shot away. Yeah, he was in a terrible state. But as far as I know, he's still living.
What was the most terrible and upsetting sight or experience that you ever had?
Well, for me, they had to shoot some horses. Lovely horses, of course, I mean, I was country bred, you see. And they were lovely horses, the cream of England, the horses was, weren't they? Because, I mean, there were no motor transports, not for after, long time after. And one night he was dragging or shifting a gun or shifting something, I don't know what he was shifting. And they got him one of their bugs in the soft places out there with the rain. And they had to shoot the horses where they were. I think that was a very bad sight. Yeah.
Did you ever go on any raids? Or attacks?
Yeah, one there in France, yes. Yeah, and of course, as I told you, we went back and went to... And then we had raids at Sri Lanka. I was thinking of the name of the Langaza plane. There was a... we knew that the enemy was in a wood, small wood. And we had to raid that one, right? Well, I was a bomb thrower at that time. What was it, 17 bombs in the front and 70? Oh, 40 altogether, I think. So if you got it, you wouldn't mean nothing. And there was a chap with me, a machine gunner, Billy Rich, he was called, from Tavistock. I never found him. I've been down there looking for him. But I never come across him. And all that night we lose any amount. And a little officer, he was shot through both knees, a little officer. He was called Arapath. And as I tell you, when I come home on leave and went back again, he was the first one I met. Yeah. Yeah, first chap I met. So that was one raid. And then he used to, of course, Paddy Crawley was a mountain where they had that very large gun. What was our call? What was the gun called?
Big Bertha.
Big Bertha. Big Bertha was in the hill, and he'd come out and shoot and go back again. And of course, we couldn't never see where it was, you see. And they made an attack one night, and they went up there, and all around the shells had been bursting around this place, but they could never hit him because he was back in the mountain. Cut back in the mountain. Yeah.
Now, you served on several fronts. Which was the worst front, the Western Front or
Well, France was the worst because there was no water. And out to Salonika, of course, you had malaria and, well, we had dysentery and we had all that. But there was plenty of water. You could wash and drink. You know, I mean, there was that feeling about it. After our people got there and they, it was sandbags up, please, and keep the water running. And that would get rid of the mosquitoes, because there wasn't stuff like there is today, because you was issued with a mosquito net. And another time, we went down to a little village. Now, I don't know where that village is. I know where it was, but I mean, I don't know the name of it. And we all went down there, and of course, there was fruit growing, see? So they said to me, there are some nice apples up there, so we'll go and get some when us get settled down. And of course, when us got up to Quince, you could do what you like with them. Have a hammer, or you could, you could beat them anyway. And the same night, we went down with sandfly fever, and we was 48 hours. You couldn't lift your head off a pillow. So there was all that sort of stuff to put up with out there, wasn't there? And I can't say.
Now, you sailed to Salonika on the...
Annabelle.
On the Annabelle, yes.
Yeah.
What was that like as a trooper? Was it crowded?
Oh, well, you can guess it was. It was an old battleship, wasn't it? Or something, I don't know what they... One of the cooks that was in our lot, he served in there as a sailor in the same boat. Yeah. So that was interesting, you know. Of course, it was rough, went across, very rough. Yeah.
What was the food like?
What they did this?
Yes, on the Hannibal.
Oh, well, we come under our food, I think, you know. You had to go up with your Dixie and have what was soup, I suppose. I knew they put an old tarpaulin in one of the holes and us could dive in and have a swim, you know. Yeah.
Can you tell me something about the mud and the lice in
France? yeah, I can. Or you get lousy wherever you was, you see. This is going over, isn't it?
Oh, not to worry. You tell me anything you like.
Yeah, well, coming back to France, when I had a very good seal. You know what that
yes.
is. So they issued me with two bags strapped around my waist. And, I felt a biting, you know, and I thought, you know, I'll take this lot off when I get back out the way. So I got back there and I took them off and I stuck them in the beam. And I often wish I could go out and see if he was still there, but I expect the barn was right up against the road, so I expect he'd been knocked down. Yeah. Oh, terrible it was. Yeah. You know, that was like the old cricket church was. They had holes. Every hole was a low scene, I think. You know. Yeah. Yeah, old chap from Chudley Norton, he was called Darky Allen, I think that was the right name of him. Stretcher bearer he was. He said, well, he was going to keep one big one and one small one and take them home. So they said, where are we going to keep them? And he said, I'll put them in the knob of the bait. You know, the brass knobs they used to take off. They wouldn't have a very long life in there, would them. You know, anything for a laugh, I suppose, you know, in their day. Yeah.
Can you remember any funny moment when you're on leave or when you're in the front line? Can you remember anything
yeah,
that was funny?
When we was going back, we went through the Rupel Pass and we had to catch up to the battalion, you see. So we were stopped and opposite us there was a depot. So we had a jock, I don't know his name no more than I know yours. I know yours now. But he went and he got two jars of rum. So we having rum and tea. And we got tiddled, you know, with this rum, about four or five of us. And we took some when we went on this, it was a little train with a German driver going up through the Rupel Pass. It was tied away from, you know, the only way they could get up through to Sofia. So, this chap Taylor, he was from Bristol, one of them, I don't know the other names, I forget. And we had rum all the way. So when we got a few miles up, they said there was nestle milk in the back truck. And the sergeant was uneasy. So he said, what have you got? And we said, rum. We said, get us a jar of rum and you can have a box of milk. So we was drunk when we got in Sofia. So me and this tailor, we went to a picture place. I bet if he's living, he remembered now. And of course, all of us could understand with these kiddies singing in the theatre, Zoe, see? So we went back, and only recently I saw the station master. He used to live up here, two doors up from me, and I didn't know it for he was going away, and I suppose he didn't know that I'd have been to Greece. So he said, I was a Killandare. Are you a Killandare?
Master.
Oh, yeah, Mr. What was he called up here?
Beaumont.
Mr. Beaumont.
Yes.
He was the station master at Exeter. He joined up. And, of course, he went to a different school than I did. And he was there, and me and George Taylor missed our train to Bucharest. And I had to go in front of the officer, and that was my second captain. You know, the first captain I had was Mr. Dunnan. He was something of Devon, wasn't he, at Exeter? Sheriff of...
Was he? Yes.
I think you'll find that, yes. Right. He was something to do with that, anyway. And he said, Blank and Taylor, I should have known. So then he put us on a train, and we passed over others. They had to get in aside and out of the way for the main train, because we were sitting in a carriage with the wooden seats and that, we first class people. And we got there 2 days before the others come in. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we wasn't very well liked with the Bulgarians, of course you wasn't. I mean, you couldn't blame them, could he? Really.
Now, you had your first Blighty leave from Salonika, did you?
Yes.
What did it feel like when you knew that you were coming home on leave?
Oh, well, the others made it feel worse than you would have else, because they wanted to go as well, I suppose. You know, as you went down by and saw them, you know. Yeah. Oh, I come home from there, I had another leave, you see. But I was one of the lucky ones to get picked. That's all I know.
What did you do when you got home on leave?
Well, I got the Totnes. That was the nearest station to Stoke Gabriel in 8 days. Payton wouldn't thought so much of, was it? Yeah. And my wife come to meet me with a dog. No buses. No, wasn't nothing of that running in 8 days. We had to walk everywhere. And we walked back, and my brothers lived at Aish. A little village, you know. And we went in there and had a bit of supper, and then we walked home. Had another mile from Aish to Soak to walk. Full margin order. Yeah, £90.
How long leave did you have? A week?
Oh, no. I think it was 25 days or something like that. And then I went back again, as I told you.
How did you feel when you had to go back on leave?
Well,
were you upset?
No, I felt all right, because I meant to say I feel that I'd been home, and you know, and saw everybody, because my mother was dead, my sister was living with her, and I don't know, I don't suppose I felt all that happy, but still, I know the wife come in and saw me off to Payton, and then I got on the train and rode to Newton, and I was had to say cheerio out there. That's all I know for that. And then, of course, you met up with different ones that you would come home with, you see. Some was from Liscar and several Cornish chaps, and then there was Devon chaps.
What did you think of your officers and NCOs? Were they a good bunch on the whole?
Well, you see, there wasn't all that many officers out in these small regiments, I call it. There was an Irishman called Oss. There was Greenslades at Torquay, the two brothers. I never saw they since, neither. And we had to learn now. We had to learn, eh? If they give the wrong order, you had to stand still. Yeah. you wouldn't move. And I was on Salisbury Plain when the king, I suppose, wasn't he? And I expected to see a great big bloke on a horse, you know. And I was number one, you know. I had to mark time all the time of our battalion, company, I should say, because he was in companies then, right across the line. And I was 13 platoon number one man, and I had to mark time all the time. Well, the other, someone was running, of course, out the end for the turnaround. And when I saw he on his horse, I thought, what a great bloke. And when he got off, he put that out. Yeah. You know, you get shocks like that, don't you, with joining the army and didn't, well, could I have told me, I was out Stoke.
Yeah.
You never saw much, did he?
Yeah.
Now, you told me earlier on something about putting up the barbed wire.
Yeah.
At night.
Yeah.
How were you detailed for that?
Oh, volunteers. You. Yeah. Yeah, that's how they got over that. They wanted volunteers to put the wire up. And the sergeant would say, you. And that was it. You had to do it.
What was the narrowest squeak that you ever had?
Narrowest squeak? Well, I think that was in Greece. The howitzers come out there, the Germans did, and we thought we were safe. We was in, like, on here was a platform, and this howitzer would go up, you see, and pitch down, straight down, and he pitched that. I was on this platform, there was a solid rock there, and there was solid rock down there, and down there there was, oh, I can't tell you now, drums of all sorts. I don't know what was in them, because I had just been sent with a message to one of them here, and this shell come down here and he pitched in the drums, and it never killed none of, I don't think it killed any of us, I don't know, man. The shrapnel and all that air went through the drums and out that way, and I had a concussion up here, and I was carried away, and I heard him say, Blakey's gone. And I was all right after. I was shell shocked, really, wasn't it? Yeah, that was the narrowest, I suppose. You get all sorts of things.
Did you ever get wounded?
No. Never got a wound. No. More than a bit of shrapnel, wasn't it, Eve?
Yeah, isn't it?
I had a bit of shrapnel in my head and a bit on that finger. But that was the finger I had bad.
But you don't count that as being wounded.
No, I didn't.
What were the NCOs like that you...
Well, they're very strict. A lot of them, I think. Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. A lot of them was a damn lot of roadsters before they joined up. They had done so many years in the army because they couldn't do naught else. And they got made lance corporals. Then they got made sergeants. One was a sergeant of the Grenadier Guards, a land sergeant he was, in the Grenadier Guards, and he was a, well, shall I say it, he was a bugger.
Yeah.
And, of course, and they had their pals, and they made them up, and see, Sergeant Major, now I forget where he come from. I forget his name, too. I can't tell you. And my captain then was Captain...
I can't help you.
No. he got a relation that speaks on the wireless now. Our captain... Well, we used to call him Rubber Legs. That's what I'm thinking. Now, see, I went back to that.
Why did you call him Rubber Legs?
Well, because he was an old Indian colonel, or captain, or major, or something he was. Oh, there was a place called Other Side of Exeter.
Not to worry.
Huh?
I say not to worry.
No, I'll think of it in a minute, but it'll be too late then. Wow, that's funny. You can't... if I could see that book, I could see. No, I know the second captain in Natarms was a chap from Canada called Fletcher. He was a nice little chap. He had to walk the back, see? And the other one had to ride a horse. And of course, the first time they issued horses was some of these old race horses, you know? And it throwed them right off. Yeah, he said, "I'll manage him." What the hell?
What happened when you saw the captain phone? I suppose you all laughed, did you?
Yeah, of course. Well, you couldn't laugh loud, you know, because you could soon get in. Because I come home from a holiday from leave, and I went to Cornwall because my wife had gone down to Cornwall. So I went right down to Cornwall, see, to kill two birds with one stone. And when I went back, you see, I went back... to Bath, and instead of getting out to Bath, I went to sleep, and I got out at Fotheringham. I can't think of that now. Well, it's on the way to London anyway. And I went back with a theatrical party, and they was going to get out at Bath as well, see, and we all slept. So I went in and saw the station master, who had to, and I was sober and properly dressed and all that there, see. So of course, when I got back, 10 o'clock, the earliest train back, I can't get on the damn station now. And I had to go in front of the captain. I can't tell you his name now, that's all I was getting around that for. Anyway, I went in and were the two sergeants each side of me and walked there, or guard or policeman or woman, and took off my hat. He said, "I could shoot you like a mad dog." Said, "I've been to Chumley," he was called, Chumley. He said, "I could shoot you like a mad dog. I've been to Devon." He said, "No, I didn't miss me train." I said, "I didn't miss me train, sir." Of course, you had to be careful what you said. And with the same, I stepped back and took out my thing from the station master, that I was sober and properly dressed and reported to me at the time a train stopped and was coming back by the 9:10 back to Bath or somewhere. And... "Oh, well," he said, "as that there is, I'll dismiss it." So I got dismissed off that lot. But you get pulled up or anything in 8 days. You know, you was only 6 months. That was all you was. 6 months a day, wasn't it? Married man, 6 months a day.
Did you ever get promotion at all?
No. I did not lose that. I was a bit of a case, you know.
Why did you lose your stripe?
Well, if I told you that, you'd laugh, I expect. When I told you I was shell-shocked and I went back for a rest, they put me on, I forget the number of the supply column,